Good morning. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, August 22nd will now come to order. Apologies for the delay. We had a fire drill this morning, very exciting, and wanted to make sure that everybody had a chance to get back in the building and that any visitors from outside had the opportunity to get through security, which I know sometimes takes a little bit of time. For those of you who are in the room, it may look like there are three commissioners, but in fact we have four because the vice chairman is on the phone. Am I correct, Mr. Vice Chairman?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, that is excellent. Before we start the agenda, I have a couple of announcements, and I want to start with a good news story, because there's enough bad news in the world. So we're going to start the day with a good news story. One of the FEC's most dedicated employees, Ruth Godding, has been featured in an article in People magazine about her 20-year friendship. This was in honor of Friendship Day, with a woman that she met, her friend Lisa, that she met through the Best Buddies program. And the two of them have been close friends for and now appear to be lifelong friends, and they've been great supports to each other, and they've learned a lot from each other, and it's a testament to how individuals can make a difference in each other's lives. So we congratulate Ruth for her recognition. I know when Ruth is somebody that I see every day, and her smile is one of the things that makes it worthwhile for me to come into the office. And I think that everybody should look up this article, and I guarantee it will give you a smile as well. I also have a couple of announcements about personnel. As we have previously announced in writing, but I think this is the first meeting that we've had since it happened, we have named a permanent inspector general, Mr. Chris Skinner. Chris comes to us with 10 years of experience in the inspector general world, conducting investigations, inspections, and internal audits. He most recently was deputy inspector general for the Office of Naval Research for 6 years, including a year as acting inspector general for the ONR. And everyone who met Chris was really impressed with him, and we are excited to have him on board and looking forward to working with him. We also want to thank Tony Baptiste, who was our acting inspector general and helped fill in while we were finishing the hiring process. So he's still there, yes?
Yeah.
Yes, oh, good. I heard a noise on the phone. I was afraid we lost the vice chairman.
Sorry, I came in late here. This is Howard Blitz with the Arizona Libertarian Party.
Oh, okay. We have several people on the phone today, so it's going to be a little bit complicated. The other personnel news is Mr. Stepanovic, who people have seen at the table before as acting Associate General Counsel for Policy, has now been named permanent Associate General Counsel for Policy, and we are delighted. He has been with the Commission since August 2008, started out as a staff attorney in policy, and has risen through the ranks, was an associate with Baker and Hostetler, and worked at another law firm before that. He has his BA from the University of Colorado at Boulder and his law degree from George Washington University. And we've all been incredibly impressed and thankful for his good work in the acting associate general counsel position, and are looking forward to many more years of great service from him. So congratulations on your permanent appointment, Mr. Stepanovic. Okay, well, with all that excitement out of the way, we will move on to the formal agenda. The first item on the agenda is Internet Ad Disclaimers Rulemaking Proposal for Reg 2011-02, because that's when we started this process. This has been on the agenda one, two, three. This is the fourth time. Started in June through July. Now it's August. Mr. Vice Chairman, got anything for us?
I can't say that I have anything new. I don't have a lot to add other than that this particular time I have not been able to develop the formulation that I think will bring us to consensus. I wish I had more to say, but that's about the extent of it right now.
For the last 4 weeks since the last meeting, my staff has reached out to your staff virtually on a daily basis, trying to see if there was something that we could talk about, some way to move the ball forward. And your staff is lovely and polite, and but they had nothing for us day after day after day. So, you know, as I said, this started in 2011. I tried to bring it back to life starting in 2016. I was hoping we could get a new rule out for the 2018 elections. That obviously didn't happen. We had a hearing over a year ago. And it is really not clear to me how we are going to get anything done before the 2020 election. I think that is deeply unfortunate, given that hundreds of thousands of people wrote in to encourage us to do this rulemaking. I think it is important. It would be beneficial. But I can't, as I said, we have tried every single day to see if there was something that we could do, some way to move forward, some conversation to have, and I can't do it alone. So I don't know where to go from here, but let me assure you that my door remains open if you would like to have a conversation and try and get this rulemaking done. I just, as I said, can't do it on my own.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I don't know if anybody else has anything they want to say on this topic. If not, we will move on to Draft Advisory Opinion 2019-14, the Arizona Libertarian Party. And did I hear we have someone on the phone for that?
Yes, ma'am, but we have a motion we need to read for this item first.
Commissioner Hunter, would you do the honors?
Yes. Make sure I have the right document. Yes. I move the commission add to the agenda consideration of the notice of availability for Reg 2019-4. This is for a different motion, but we'll just might as well get them done now. An audit division recommendation memo on the South Dakota Democrat Party, A17-21, and that the commission determined pursuant to 11 CFR 2.7D that business so requires and no earlier public announcement was possible. I further move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the commission may consider the late submission of agenda document number 19-39A and 19-32A1.
And those last agenda documents are the our draft responses to the Arizona Libertarian Party, which is why the secretary thoughtfully told us we needed to get that motion in first. So thank you, Commissioner Hunter, for moving that the commission add to the agenda consideration of the notice of availability for Reg 2019-04, reporting segregated party accounts, and audit division recommendation memorandum on the South Dakota Democratic Party, A17-21, and that the commission determined pursuant to 11 CFR 2.7D that business so requires no earlier public announcement was possible, and further move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the commission may consider this the late submission of agenda document number 19-39A and 19-32A. Any discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Ms. Hemsley.
Thank you, Chair Weintraub. Commissioners, good morning. Agenda document number 19-32-A1 is a revised draft response advisory opinion request from the Arizona Libertarian Party, the AZLP, which asks whether it may transfer $2,000 to the Libertarian National Party, the LNP, to help cover the LNP's overall cost of implementing the state customer relationship management system without having to register as a political committee. The draft states that the AZLP has previously been granted by the commission status as a state committee of a national political party responsible for the day-to-day operations of the LNP in Arizona and has put federal candidates on the ballot. Further, because the LNP and AZLP are national and state committees of the same party, the AZLP may transfer the $2,000 to the LNP using federally permissible funds as proposed. However, The draft further concludes that the amount disbursed must be counted against the registration and reporting threshold of $1,000 for purposes of determining whether the AZLP is a political committee, and accordingly, the AZLP must register as a political committee if it makes a proposed transfer. We didn't receive any comments on the request or the draft. Thank you. Be happy to answer any questions.
Can I just ask about footnote 2 in revised draft A? In fact, if there are any changes from the original draft that we had on the agenda last time in response to the new facts, if you could explain where those are and why they're there.
Sure. So in the background, we added just a little bit of clarification on page 2, lines 10 through 12, about to clarify that the LNP offers the customer relationship management system free of charge to its state affiliates, that there's no actual fee to be onboarded. And then we also added footnote 2 discussing that it's not a payment for services at a usual and normal charge because there is no fee to be onboarded. They don't have to pay for it. They just happen to have the funds and want to help with the overall cost to the LNP. And then the footnote went on to discuss whether the disbursement could also be considered an expenditure. And the footnote goes on to determine that it could, and in either event, we think that the disbursement would be made for the purposes of influencing a federal election and so would have to be counted towards their political committee status.
So basically, any way you look at it, they end up with the same answer. Thank you for that. Any discussion? Mr. Hunter.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. As I mentioned to you before the meeting, I'm prepared to support revised draft A, but I think it prudent to remove the footnote we were just talking about. I think it's not necessary for the conclusion. I think it's somewhat confusing. I know many people were working on drafting it, but because it's not necessary and it's confusing and it seems to collapse a couple of different definitions together, I don't think we need it. So I'm willing to support the draft without footnote 2.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I could.
Yes. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Just type in. When I was looking at the footnote as well, what stuck out to me at first was I wasn't sure that it was necessary in order to reach the conclusion that the draft puts forth, and left me a little confused as to whether or not we would still consider the party to have met the reporting threshold, even if this had been a legitimate payment for goods or services at the usual normal charge. And because there's a little bit of confusion as to what the full impact of this footnote is, and in light of the fact that I'm not sure it's necessary for answering the question, I'm on the same page with Commissioner Hunter that I think we can answer this question, and I don't think it would impede the analysis at all in order to take this out and leave the rest of the analysis to speak for itself.
Okay, well, I actually think the footnote is helpful. And as I said, it gets to the point that any way you look at this transaction, it's still, they end up with the same answer. But I think it is more important that we answer the question. So if there are 4 votes to go forward without footnote 2, then I will support that. Any other discussion? Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you. I move approval of agenda document number 19-32-A1, revised draft A, except that we with the removal of footnote number 2.
Thank you. Commissioner Hunter has moved approval of advisory opinion 2019-14 to AZLP. Set forth an agenda document number 19-32-A1 with the deletion of footnote number 2. Commissioner Walther.
I'll vote for that motion, but I'm also going to go on record as saying that I would support it if and footnote 2 were included in a particular draft we voted on.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion passes unanimously. The next item on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2019-10, a draft response to Price for Congress. We have four draft answers at this point. I don't know if that means that each one gets one vote. Mr. Paulson.
Thank you, Chair Weintraub. Good morning, commissioners. Before you are agenda documents 19-33-A, 19-33-B, 19-33-C, and 19-33-D, which respond to an advisory opinion request from Price for Congress, the principal campaign committee of retired Representative Dr. Thomas Price. The requester asks whether it may contribute committee assets to a nonprofit organization and whether that organization may engage in certain activities if Dr. Price will serve as its president and CEO. Draft A, which was held over from the July 25th open meeting, and Draft D both conclude that the committee may donate its assets to the organization as proposed. Drafts B and C both conclude that the proposed activity is prohibited because the donation constitutes the conversion of committee funds to personal use. We did not receive any comments on the drafts. Thank you, and I'd be happy to address any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Do we have any questions for comment or?
Is Mr. Passantino on the telephone, the requester?
Yes, ma'am. Chair, I am on the phone.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Passantino. Do we have any questions? Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to talk a little bit about Draft B, which was entered into the public record after our last conversation. My understanding, Madam Chair, is that that's the draft you're planning to support. So I'd like to talk about it and ask you a few questions with the hope of, one more time, changing your mind to support either Draft A or Draft B. I think for the record, I still would like to support Draft A, but am willing to support Draft D, and thank you to OGC for drafting that if we could get four votes. With regard to Draft B, and we talked about some of this in the last open meeting, so I'll try to make it quick. Under Section 30114 of FECA, a candidate can transfer money to an organization, and this is under subsection A3, an organization described in Section 170C of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986. In the last open meeting, the chair referenced a tweet, and we went back and looked it up and entered it into the public record. So on the public record, there's a memo from the vice chair and me dated July 25th, and it lays out a tweet from Ellen April, who I believe is a tax professor in California, and her initial tweet says, the proposed draft gets tax law wrong. A Section 501c4 organization is not described in IRC Section 170c. 170c describes orgs that can receive transfers eligible for charitable contribution deduction. 501c3s, yes. C4s, no. And that is a lot of what the chair, some of the language that you were using at the last public meeting was similar to that tweet. But then I'm not sure if you saw that there was a correction entered later by the same professor. She wrote, my error, being a knee-jerk tax lawyer, per draft opinion, C4 promises not to lobby or campaign and thus is described in 170C for purposes of the act and commission regulations, not what we tax folk would say. Why set up a C4 that will operate as a C3? And Mr. Passantino explained why he wants to set up a C4, and frankly, I'm not sure that that's any of our business. But nevertheless, he wants to set up a C4, and this tax lawyer, who it seemed like people were relying on before, then changed her mind. And as OGC's original draft A spells out very nicely, this section is permissible to donate to a C4 under this section. Draft B states on page 5, line 7, The commission has never applied 30114A3 to contributions to 501c4 entities, which are not subject to the same restrictions as C3, and it declines to do so here. And it goes on to say, you know, C3s are okay. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. C3s are okay, but C4s wouldn't be charitable, so no can do. So my question to the chair is, the way I'm reading this, and maybe I'm misreading it, the first part of draft B of the analysis says there is never an example where a C4 could qualify under Section 170C of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986. So that's my first question. Before we get to the personal use issue, is there ever, again, my reading of your draft is that there's never an opportunity for a C4 to fall under provision A3.
I think that you may have overestimated my reliance on that tweet. I did mention it, but the analysis was based on my own history with 170C, which is a provision that I am familiar with and have looked at over the years. It comes up in ethics rules as well as in the campaign finance law, although it's a provision of the tax law. So I've been familiar with that provision for many, many years. And I am, in my understanding, and, you know, we've looked and we haven't seen really any, I think there's one old example, which is in footnote six. We found one example from a very long time ago where a volunteer fire company was viewed as charitable under Section 170C1 because they were deemed to be for the use of a political subdivision of a state for exclusively public purposes and lessen the burdens of government. But other than that, I'm not aware of any instance where 170C has been said to include 501c4 organizations. It is the section of the tax code that defines what is a charitable contribution, where people can take tax deductions. And so I just don't think there's any authority for it. I don't think it's generally viewed as encompassing 501c4s. And certainly the commission has never said that that is true. What the tax lawyer said on Twitter was, speaking as a tax lawyer, not as a campaign finance expert, she said she wouldn't apply 170C to a 501c4, but she thought maybe the commission could do it under commission regulations and the act, but that's not her primary area of expertise, that's ours.
So I didn't hear an answer to the question. Is it possible for a C4 to avail themselves of Section 30114A3? Can they ever be characterized as a 17C of the IRS?
I don't believe so.
So never. No 501C4 can ever be considered a 170 except for the firefighters.
It's never happened yet. So, yeah, I don't think so.
But the reason people come in for advisory opinion requests is, you know, if it had ever happened before, if we had ever written on the same facts, then they wouldn't have asked for one. So they're asking us to apply our law to the facts before us. And so it's not, it might be true that we've never found for this, but my question is, can a C4 ever be considered a 170 in your mind?
Nope.
No, never. So no C3s. Okay.
No C4s.
Just because they're not. I mean, why wouldn't Congress have written right into that section for contributions described in for only 501c3s?
Maybe because nobody thinks that 170C describes anything other than 501c3s because it never has been.
Well, there, as I said before, draft A walks through an excellent recitation of why, under these circumstances, they're indistinguishable. The 501c3 and the organization that Mr. Price would like to establish is indistinguishable for the purposes of 170C.
I understand that's your opinion.
So I'm going to move on to the for any other lawful purpose. But before I do, Mr. Pasatino, would you like to comment on that part or any part before I move on to the personal use conversation?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to waste everyone's time. I can read tea leaves like everyone else. I'm in agreement with you, Chairman Hunter, Commissioner Hunter, in terms of the interpretation of the law. I believe that draft B as in boy gets the law wrong, respectfully. I think that it draws a false equivalence by saying because the commissioner has long considered 170C to be the equivalent of a 501c3, just because all past advisory opinions grant the ability to provide funds to a 501c3, doesn't mean that the reverse can't be true, that an entity that is planning to engage in conduct consistent with IRC 170C should therefore not be allowed to engage in that behavior is to me just logically and legally wrong. But again, I don't want to waste people's time. I think that D as in David, going by the any lawful use will also get us there. And so I'm prepared to talk about draft D as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pasatino. I agree with what you just said. So moving on to draft D and the provision of the law 301.114A6, which states that monies can be transferred for any other use or transferred for any other lawful purpose unless prohibited by subsection B of this section, which is the personal use section. My understanding of this draft is that, you know, obviously you think that this organization would be considered personal use. And that is spelled out, I guess, most clearly on page 7, line 12 of draft B. The organization proposes to act as a personal vehicle for Dr. Price to promote his ideas, personal brand, and reputation using campaign funds. That's actually not true. They don't propose to act as a personal vehicle. And also later on where it says, it discusses at the bottom of page 7, line 18, the request proposes no oversight or financial controls over Dr. Price's reimbursement decisions. He appears to have unilateral control over this area of the organization's finances. These appearances and publications will enhance Dr. Price's professional reputation and his earning ability, notwithstanding the organization's pledge to only organize unpaid speaking opportunities for Dr. Price. So my question for the chair is, If Mr. Price were to come up with a committee to say that they had to take a look at all of his expenses and somebody else approved his expenses, would that change your opinion if that fact was changed?
I'm not going to give hypothetical opinions on the fly. I do think that what has been proposed is different than anything that the commission has looked at in the past. And I also think that we've seen in recent times that there has been an uptick in activity by campaigns of former members. And I'm speaking generally now. I'm not saying anything about Dr. Price, but we have seen that we have a problem out there with what have come to be known as zombie campaigns, campaigns that live on after the member is no longer in office. And do a variety of things, but, you know, I think we always have to come back to the law. The law was actually changed on personal use. So a lot of the old advisory opinions that were relied on in the original draft predated the change in the personal use law, which is now defined as using the funds to fulfill any commitment, obligation, or expense of a person that would exist irrespective of the candidate's election campaign or individual duties as a holder of federal office. And I think that we really need to take a hard look at what those words mean, because for a former office holder, there isn't anything. He doesn't have an election campaign or duties as a holder of federal office. So everything falls into that bucket. I think that it would be good for the commission. I'm not anticipating that we would necessarily find consensus to do this, but I think in an ideal world, the commission should look at putting out some more stringent guidance on how long these committees can continue to linger out there and be used by former office holders once they are no longer in office and they are plainly not being used anymore to pay expenses that are related to a candidate's election campaign or duties as a holder of federal office. But having said that, when I am faced with an advisory opinion, which is an opportunity to weigh in on that question, I am going to be looking at any such requests more strictly as we go forward, because I think there's a problem out here that was perhaps not recognized in the past, but when we issue these advisory opinions, they are looked to by other individuals, and I believe that to say yes to this request would open up new inroads into the personal use restrictions, and I'm just not willing to go there, and I don't think it's consistent with the literal words of the law.
I think if you read the law literally, every person, when they stop being candidate, would have to, you know, give all of the money back, and nobody does that, and there's all kinds of permitted uses that are spelled out in our own statute. So regardless of how we want to try to, you know, look in the future, the statute permits all of this, and it's been going on for years and years and years. Yes, there have been some issues with zombie PACs, and we have a recent enforcement matter where four commissioners voted to find certain uses violated that provision. We also adopted a policy through RAD, and they've done a nice job at implementing that. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about a zombie PAC. We're talking about somebody who came in and asked if they can transfer the money under a provision of our law. And for us to say, for not us, but for some of us to say, one of the reasons that this is not okay is because things have changed and sort of getting bad out there. And from line 3, page 8, again, these appearances and publications will enhance Dr. Price's professional reputation. I mean, I think that a lot of other organizations out there will have to be concerned if you vote for Draft B. For example, there was a recent news article about former Senator Heidi Heitkamp, who opened an organization, and she's on the board of directors. She's one of the two founders of an organization called One Country. And my understanding is that's a 501c4. An article written in Time on April 25th, 2019 says, quote, a senator who lost re-election in 2018 is using her leftover campaign funds to push her fellow Democrats to reconnect with rural voters, asking that they risk letting President Donald Trump win a second term if they don't. And as I said, she's on the board of directors. The group has already, this is from a different news source, the group has already started working with the Democratic National Committee, according to Axios. And Time magazine reported that Heitkamp is using leftover campaign funds for the project. Another press release from the organization notes that One Country Project, founded by former U.S. Senators Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Donnelly, launched the start of a billboard and social media campaign targeting state fairs in 11 states. The states are listed, and then it says the message in each state will focus on both state-specific and national failings by President Trump for rural communities. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what standard Senator Heitkamp is supposed to look at to find out whether or not a commissioner or two thinks that these activities, whether or not a commissioner or two will think that these activities might enhance her professional reputation and earning ability. So I think it's very dangerous to start, you know, basically making up new standards, you know, post hoc without a rulemaking. And it really will change what a lot of people are doing out there. And it certainly doesn't fall under any provision of the law or commission precedent.
I have to respectfully disagree with that. I'm going back to the statute. The statute that says it's personal use to use leftover campaign funds to fulfill any commitment, obligation, or expense of a person that would exist irrespective of the candidate's election campaign or individual's duties as a holder of federal office. And as I said, in the ideal world, I think we would do a rulemaking, issue policy guidance, do something more broad-based to return to what Congress appeared to have anticipated. I think one possibility is that in that ideal world, perhaps the commission would say, you know, you have to close down these accounts within a set period of time after the office holder is no longer running for office, and perhaps the pathways that are listed specifically in the statute maybe those are the only places where you can put the money. But as I said, if I am asked now to opine in the advisory opinion context on whether something complies with this provision on the personal use that says that it has to be, it can't be used to fulfill any commitment, obligation, or expense of a person that would exist irrespective of the candidate's election campaign or individual's duties as a holder of federal office, that's what I'm going to look to.
Well, and again, they would have to return all money the minute the campaign was over in order to accomplish what I...
Well, there are winding down periods. I mean,
well, okay. But going back for a quick second, and then I'd like to hear from Mr. Pasatino about drafty or whatever he wants to talk about for any other lawful purpose or personal use. But going back to, I think you just said, well, maybe we should just look at the list in the statute. Well, as you know, one of the things that's listed, which we just talked about, is 170C of IRC. So what if Heidi Heitkamp's group or Dr. Price's group said, okay, we'll go through the burdensome process and we'll change ourselves to a C3, but they're going to be doing the exact same thing, the exact same thing. You would approve that because I think you said under the law that's okay.
Well, I think not everything that qualifies under C4 would qualify under C3. So I can't. Again, that's a hypothetical situation where you're assuming that they would be doing the exact same thing and they would have C3 status.
I'm saying if they submitted the same request, but everything was the same except for they said, I'm going to be a C3, would you approve that? Because they would still, under your view, that might still enhance their professional reputation.
Because of the specific provision in the law that refers to 170C, I would likely approve that, but I don't really like to opine on hypotheticals.
Okay. Mr. Pasatino, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I do. I appreciate the opportunity. I have to say I have significant concerns here that the commission appears to be attempting to legislate here contrary to explicit statutory, regulatory, and past advisory opinions based solely on the anticipated speech of this individual, and that this is a outcome-based analysis, not in any way based on past precedent, and it's based on who's doing the requesting. If you look at the past precedent, if you look at past advisory opinions, this commission has made explicitly clear that if it's any lawful purpose, even if it were one that's not consistent with 170C, and I'm referring to advisory opinion 1993-10, the Colorado one, which explicitly found that it does not have to be consistent with 170C. Now, we've already said we're willing to do that, but your past guidance says we don't have to do it. We are also now engaged in this conversation about, is this in some way going to be either controlled by or somehow associated with the former member? As the commission knows, we have numerous past advisory opinions, which we've cited to, which are in the draft, 1996-40, the Hancock one, 1983-27, the McDaniel, 1997-1, Bevel. All of those are examples where a former member, former campaign commission, transferred their funds to a tax-exempt entity, albeit a 501c3, in those instances, not a 501c4, but functionally identical the same, in which those individuals, the former members, were either presidents, chairmen, had spouses, had children, all on the board, clearly directly associated. So we're drawing a distinction here that the commission has never drawn before, and we're drawing it on a completely artificial basis. As Commissioner Hunter has said, we could very easily create a 501c3 and do all of these activities. We don't want to for the reasons that we've described. We don't have to under the commission's laws. What we're doing here is we are avoiding explicit past precedent for a reason that does not in any way tie to the law that governs this commission. And we're doing it, I fear, because of who's doing the asking. We're not doing it because of any logic. Under the logic that we're being presented with here, no member could do anything, including all of the past advisory opinions that have previously been blessed. This is not a new request. This is only a minor deviation from what has been explicitly authorized. And I have significant concerns that we're doing it for a reason that this body is not authorized to engage in to reach that conclusion. And I guess I'll add one other thing. There's been significant discussion about, well, we don't have any oversight. We don't have any of the personal use. They're telling us things. It's controlled. Well, this commission, if we were to use these funds in a way that's contrary to our representation, well, then it would become a personal use issue again for this commission. You don't lose the jurisdiction over the use of the funds if we misrepresented how we intend to use the funds. So I think that all of that analysis in draft B as in boy ignores or overlooks the fact that the commission does have the ability to conduct oversight if we're not doing what we say we're going to do. And if we do what we say we're going to do, we're acting squarely within the law and the regulations and the past precedent of this commission.
Mr. Passantino, are the activities of these proposed C4 related to Dr. Price's election campaign?
No more than the conduct for Hancock, McDaniel, Bevel related to their past campaign.
I believe those opinions were issued. Excuse me, Mr. Passantino. I believe those opinions were issued before the law was changed to codify this interpretation of the personal use prohibition. It says that you cannot use the money to fulfill any commitment, obligation, or expense of a person that would exist irrespective of the candidate's election campaign or individual's duties as a holder of federal office. Can you please explain to me how what you propose to do is related to the candidate's election campaign, or he's no longer a candidate, so I think that's a problem, or duties as a holder of federal office? Oh, he's not a holder of federal office either. And I've heard a lot of language, all due respect, from you, Mr. Passantino, and from Commissioner Hunter, but I have not heard a response to my statutory problem.
So the answer to the statutory problem is, I think, the same as the other, which is that we don't know what this individual's future political aspirations are going to be, what they're going to tie to. Just as we can't discuss hypotheticals on one side, I don't know what the answer is. I can't tell you that his future political aspirations won't in some way tie to the lawful activities of this entity. And if that were the case under your analysis, it would be proper. There's not a time limit here. And as long as it's not personal use, if at some point in the future it relates to future activities, which I don't know, I don't see that as a definitive full stop, as it has never been. And I don't think that the analysis changes based on that one statutory change that you're referring to.
Are you saying he's planning on using the C4 in relation to an election future campaign for office?
No, Chairman, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, I don't know what the future holds. I don't know if in some way the activities of this organization in some way tie. I don't expect it. That is not our goal. You're asking me to address future hypotheticals, which I'm saying it's just as improper for me to engage in as it would be for anyone else to engage in. Our request right now is based on the facts as we understand them, as we're submitting them. We know we could stand up a 501c3 and provide the funds to a 501c3 organization. There are other reasons why, as we've discussed in the previous hearing, we don't think we're required to do that. That is an IRS issue. That is not a Federal Election Commission issue. So that's the reason why we are making this request. But I don't think that it ties to the statutory use of campaign funds issue or the personal use analysis.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to add a couple of thoughts. As I mentioned last time, I support draft A. For the reasons I explained at length, I think that a 501c4 can still fit within the confines of 170C of the Internal Revenue Code, that 170C looks not at the formal designation of the organization, but rather at the function of the organization to determine whether or not it fits within its parameters. But turning to the issue of A6 of Section 3114 and how we apply the personal use test and the irrespective test, I'm concerned about the application of that in draft B. A number of years ago, when I was still back up on Capitol Hill in the aftermath of the passage of McCain-Feingold, the any other lawful purpose provision was taken out originally. And I recall many members of Congress, when they realized that, for example, they would not be able to use campaign funds to, say, run for governor, should they decide to retire from the House or retire from the Senate, and run for state office, assuming that the state for which they were seeking that office permitted the funds in the amounts that were in their campaign fund. That was one of the issues that led to the any other lawful purpose being immediately inserted back into the law. However, the way that I understand the draft B's application of the irrespective test would seem to vitiate that understanding, which again was the if not the chief reason, but was certainly one of the main reasons why A6 was inserted back into the law. I believe within maybe even a year or two of McCain-Feingold's passage, I'd have to go back and check the legislative history. So I'm a little concerned that that read undermines what Congress specifically sought to do and is an application in a manner that is not consistent with how this has been viewed in the past. The way we've looked at personal use are, I think we get a lot of clarification about what that test was intended to accomplish by looking at the list, which is admittedly a non-exhaustive list. But when we start looking at mortgage and rent payments and clothing purchases, country club memberships, tuition payments, so forth, payments that immediately inure to the benefit of the office holder. I don't see what's being proposed here as fitting within the nature of the categories that are listed there. And like I said, I think that if we're going to apply the irrespective test in the manner that is proposed by draft B, that we're going to find a lot of members that may have used their campaign funds in the past to, I don't know, run for mayor, run for state office, for governor. They might be shocked to find out that they may have been violating FECA when they did so.
Commissioner Hunter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with everything that's been said. And in addition to the examples that Commissioner Peterson gave, what about current office holders who are donating to 501c4s?
I think that's an entirely different situation.
How so?
Because current office holders who have they have ongoing political needs to ingratiate themselves with various constituent groups could well decide that it is related to their current campaign to give money to certain charities, to certain C4s who are popular amongst their constituents. I think that could be a campaign-related purpose, assuming that it's not something that falls into the personal use restrictions.
What if doing so would enhance their professional reputation?
You're still not looking at the words of the statute, Commissioner.
Yes, I think the opposite is true.
Well, I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree. Would you like to go to motions? Or I don't want to cut off debate, but I'm just not sure that we're accomplishing anything here.
Well, as I said in the last open meeting on this, I know Mr. Pasatino has his reasons for filing an advisory opinion request, but I personally don't think that he even needs the protection of one, and I'm really, as he said, I have significant concerns about certain commissioners moving in this direction for all of the reasons that have been discussed. But I am happy to move draft A. Let me just check. Are there any? Would any of my colleagues support draft D other than Commissioner Peterson if I moved that? Commissioner Walther, would you be willing to vote for draft D, which is the version that the Office of General Counsel drafted, saying that this was okay under the any other lawful purpose provision of the statute?
I don't think it would support that. I think the lawful purpose provision is something we have to look at. But in this particular case, you've got a situation where, we can't do it under C4, we can't do it under C3, so let's just do it and call it a lawful purpose and forget about it. And I don't think that's a proper way to proceed with the kind of confines that we're already either accepting or rejecting, as the case may be, as we go through this. So I don't think that particular phrase is going to carry the day with me.
Okay.
I know we discussed it, and I understand the concerns, but I also have concerns about the fact that it's so wide open that, you know, under the bylaws, which we haven't seen and haven't been seen to see what they really say, but in theory, under the bylaws, they can amend them at any time. And the theory, as I read it, that could be any one person and basically do a whole slug of different things that we aren't contemplating. So it doesn't, it's so open that that raises some concerns with me.
Okay. Therefore, I will move draft A, which is the one that we discussed at the last open meeting. Again, I was willing to support draft D if my colleagues were willing to join on, but there's no indication of that. So I therefore move approval of agenda document number 19-33A, otherwise known as draft A.
Thank you. Commissioner Hunter has moved with respect to advisory opinion request 2019-10 that the commission adopt agenda document 19-33A, which is called draft A, in response. Any discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No.
No.
Motion fails 2-2 with the vice chairman and Commissioner Hunter voting in favor and Commissioner Walther and me voting against. Commissioner Walther, do you want to make any motions?
I don't know that we need one, but I'll be glad to move to, excuse me, somebody wants to interrupt me here. Sorry. Let me just say that considering which of the two no drafts, I would prefer draft C, but I recognize that I would support draft B as well, and that's the one that I understand the chair supports. So to get to those two votes, I'm going to support adopting draft B.
Thank you. I believe Commissioner Walther has moved approval of agenda document number 19-33-B, draft B, with respect to advisory opinion request 2019-10. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails 2-2 with Commissioner Walther and me voting in favor and Commissioner Hunter and the vice chairman voting against. I think there's nothing left but for counsel to draft a letter to the requester saying the commission was unable to render a response. Sorry, Mr. Passantino. Really, it's not personal.
Yeah, thank you.
The next item on the agenda, we have three notices of availability. We've been getting a bunch of petitions, and the first one is with respect to Reg 2019-02 to amend 11 CFR Section 104.5C. Mr. Knopp.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, before you get started, Madam Chair, if I could just note that there are three of these on the agenda today, and as the document on the public record notes, these are just, the wording I don't have in front of me, but essentially we're required by our regulations to put these out, and it doesn't mean that we're in favor of doing these. Thank you. It doesn't mean that we're in favor of doing these rulemakings. Again, our regulations essentially require us to put that out. I'd like to consider in the future amending that. I'm not sure. I just want to think about whether or not that's something that makes a lot of sense. And one of the reasons is there was an article in Axios a few weeks ago that in my view, was grossly misinterpreted what we did at the commission. We put out one of these NOAs, as we call them, notifications of availability, and the Axios article made it seem like this was something we were really considering. when we weren't. And in these cases, we're not either. We're putting it out for the public to get comment from the public as to whether or not we should engage in a rulemaking. So I just wanted to make that statement before I intend to support the following three because that's what our regs essentially require us to do. But I wanted to make that clear before we vote on these three. Thank you.
I appreciate your concern, Commissioner. It is often the case that people misreport on what's actually going on here. But I do think that it's a valuable method for citizens to reach out to their government and try and engage with the public and try and engage with the commission and see if they can get public support for what they view would be positive changes in the regulation. So I would be open to seeing if there's some language that we can use to clarify what is actually going on here, but I would probably not be open to trying to shut off that pathway for citizens to...
I hear you.
No, that's okay.
I agree that there should be some pathway for citizens to do this. It's just that it's easy to misinterpret it. And there is some language, as I said, in the public memos, and maybe there's something we can say more forcefully in the future about just considering this. But I did speak to the Axios reporter, and she said she did call your office before she wrote the story. Of course, she didn't call my office or Peterson's, but we're getting used to that. So I just wanted to say that that's something that we need to consider.
As you may recall, Commissioner, the chair's office usually gets the press calls. I actually don't recall speaking to that.
She didn't speak to you. She spoke to one of your staff members.
Commissioner Walther.
Just a comment to support your comment that, yes, I think we need to do something. That's been a concern of my own when we send that out is what does that really mean to the public in terms of really acceptability or who's behind it or that kind of thing. So I think next time, let's experiment with a way that might get the job done and make it clear for the public.
Madam Chair.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Oh, yeah. I just want to add to what's being said that under our regulations, we do have this method by which interested citizens and groups can file a rulemaking petition. And if they meet particular requirements, then the commission is under an obligation to make sure that this goes public, that it's put on the Federal Register. It's made very clear in Section 200.3 of 11 CFR that the commission will publish a notice of availability in the Federal Register and that a comment period is put in place. And that same section in subsection D, it says the commission will not consider the merits of the petition before the expiration of the comment period on the notice of availability. So this is a mechanism by which an issue can be brought before the commission's attention, that the public has an opportunity thereafter to weigh in on it. And then the commission can then at that later point make the substantive decision of whether or not to proceed with the rulemaking. We're at kind of the ministerial stage. And as it said, we're under an obligation not to make we're not considering the merits of the petition. So for the sake of just making sure that everybody understands what the procedural stage we're at right now, I think it's useful to have the clarifications that that the other commissioners have mentioned thus far.
Okay. Having said that, Mr. Knopp, would you like to tell us what's in this petition?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you is a draft notification of availability for a petition for rulemaking received from the Campaign Legal Center. The petition asks the Commission to amend one of its regulations to require any unauthorized committee that starts an election year as a quarterly filer to continue to follow the quarterly reporting schedule through any primary elections in which the committee is involved. If approved, the draft NOA will be published in the Federal Register, and the Commission will receive public comments on the petition for a period of 60 days. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Knopp. And while my colleagues are correct that the fact that we are agreeing to publish this in the Federal Register is not an indication of Commission imprimatur on the ideas expressed therein, I personally think that this does raise a very interesting and important idea. What it responds to is that committees, not candidate committees, but super PACs, in particular, have been gaming the system, and they switched their reporting filing basis. They can do it on an annual basis under the rules, but they're doing it in a way so as to leave the public in the dark before important primaries, because they switch strategically, and then the information will come onto the public record eventually, but not necessarily before the primary. And we've also seen entities that pop up right before the an important primary or election and manage it so that they don't have to do any reporting at all until after the election, which defeats the entire purpose of providing this important information to the citizens so they can know where the support is coming from before they actually vote. So I think this raises an important issue. It's an issue I've been concerned about for a number of years, and I would be, I think that this suggests a new approach, which is to say that they could not switch before the primary. Another way of looking at it would be to say you could only do it on election, switch on an election cycle basis rather than an annual basis. I think there are various ways one could try and address the problem that's arisen. But I'm looking forward to public comment on this, but my initial take on this issue is that I am actually in favor of our doing something along these lines. I don't know if there's any interest by anybody else or if anyone else cares to comment. Seeing nobody, I will entertain a motion. Mr. Hunter, are you handling motions for us today?
Sure. I move approval of notice of availability for, is it, 2019-2, notification of availability, agenda document number 19-37-A.
Thank you. Commissioner Hunter has moved approval of agenda document 19-37A about proposed Reg 2019-02. Should the motion pass, it will be published in the Federal Register. There will be a 60-day comment. Yes, 60 days of public comment. And as I said, I look forward to seeing those comments. Any discussion on the motion? Not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
And the motion passes unanimously. Next item on the agenda is another notice of availability for Reg 2019-03 mailing list exchange. Mr. Buckley, hello.
Thank you, Chair Weintraub. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 19-38-A contains a draft notification of availability for a petition for rulemaking submitted to the Commission by the Campaign Legal Center. The petition asks the Commission to revise its regulation requiring the reporting of receipts and disbursements by political committees to specify that the regulation applies to the receipt or disbursement of a mailing list or other valuable list, even if the list is received or disbursed as part of an equal value exchange. The notification seeks comment on whether the Commission should commence a rulemaking based on this petition. The comment period will run for 60 days following publication of the notification in the Federal Register. After the comment period has concluded and after the comments have been considered, the Commission may decide whether to initiate a rulemaking. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Do we have any questions or discussion? Commissioner Hunter.
I move approval of agenda document number 19-38-A.
Thank you. Commissioner Hunter has moved approval of agenda document number 19-38-A, a notice of availability for Reg 2019-03 concerning mailing list exchanges. Any discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
The motion. Sorry. I heard that. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Ah, I see we have you on the next one also. So the next item on the agenda is notice of availability for Reg 2019-04, reporting segregated party accounts. Mr. Buckley.
Thank you again, Chair Weintraub. Good morning again, Commissioners. Agenda document 19-39-A contains a draft notification of availability for a petition for rulemaking submitted to the Commission by the Campaign Legal Center and the Center for Responsive Politics. The petitioners ask the Commission to promulgate rules to specifically require reporting of the special purpose accounts created by the Consolidated and Further Continuing Appropriations Act of 2015. The notification seeks comment on whether the commission should commence a rulemaking based on this petition. The comment period will run for 60 days following publication of the notification in the Federal Register. After the comment period has concluded and after the comments have been considered, the commission may decide whether to initiate a rulemaking. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Buckley. Do we have any questions or comments? Excuse me, comments on this. These Cromnibus accounts have been on the books for years, and there's nothing in our regulations that acknowledges their existence. So this is something that I, again, have been concerned about for a while. I think it would be a good idea for us to update our regulations so that they reflected all the ways that people can give to the party committees under this law. So I'm looking forward to comments, and we'll see what happens. Commissioner Hunter, would you like to do the honors?
Yes. I move approval of agenda document number 19-39-A.
Thank you. Commissioner Hunter has moved approval of agenda document 19-39-A, a notice of availability for Reg 2019-04 on reporting segregated party accounts. Any discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And the motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Buckley. The last item on the agenda, almost last, is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the South Dakota Democratic Party, A17-21. Mr. Faven, are you presenting, or Ms. Brown?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Mr. Faven.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum, ADRM, on the South Dakota Democratic Party. The draft final audit report, known as the DFAR, was provided to the committee on July 1st, 2019, and is attached to the ADRM. The committee responded to the DFAR on July 19th, 2019. The ADRM provides the audit staff's recommendations for each of the following three findings in the DFAR. Finding one, misstatement of financial activity, increased activity. Finding two, contributions from unregistered political organizations. And finding three, reporting of debts and obligations. We are available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Faven? Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Faven. We just needed some extra time to consider some things, and thank you for answering some questions, someone in your office, I think, but I'm prepared to approve it.
Great.
As for me, I am generally supportive of the recommendations that are in there. I believe there should be an additional finding in there with respect to joint fundraising. This is one in a series of committees that we've had before us that were engaged in these massive joint fundraising committees where money changed hands very quickly between one committee and another in a way that I think raises issues under the contribution limit. So I intend to first support a motion to add a finding on joint fundraising, but after that, I intend to otherwise approve the document, which I think is otherwise sound and well-reasoned and the right approach.
Okay.
Did you want to say something?
No.
Okay.
Do you want to make your motion first?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Do you want to make the motion on joint fundraising? Yeah. Motion one. Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In A1721 audit of South Dakota Democratic Party, I move that the commission make a finding that the South Dakota Democratic Party violated the joint misspelling fundraising regulations and 11 CFR section 102 dash or 102.17C when it received $2,494,000 in net proceeds from the Hillary Victory Fund Joint Fundraising Committee, and on the same day transferred these programs to the Democratic National Committee.
Thank you. Commissioner Walther has moved in A17-21, audit of South Dakota Democratic Party, that the commission make a finding that the South Dakota Democratic Party violated the joint fundraising regulations at 11 CFR section 102.17C when it received $2,494,000 in net proceeds from the Hillary Victory Fund Joint Fundraising Committee, and on the same day transferred these proceeds to the Democratic National Committee. Any discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails 2-2 with Commissioner Walther and me voting in favor and the Vice Chairman and Commissioner Hunter voting against. Do we have another motion, Commissioner Hunter?
Yes, I move approval of agenda document number 19-40-A.
Thank you. Commissioner Hunter has moved approval of agenda document 19-40-A. The audit division recommendation memorandum in A17-21, the audit of the South Dakota Democratic Party. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, I will call the question. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
And the motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Favin.
Thank you.
I have been reminded that I was remiss at the beginning of the meeting when I was welcoming Mr. Skinner and congratulating Mr. Stepanovic. We have another new employee. So we are very happy to welcome Christine McLaren to our Office of General Counsel as our new Assistant General Counsel for Administrative Law. She comes to us from the Department of Navy's Bureau of Medicine and Surgery, where she served as the Deputy Counsel. And we are very happy to have her and have her expertise. And we also want to thank Mr. Robert Kahn for serving in an acting capacity while we were doing the personnel hunt. I am really pleased that we are moving to put permanent employees into a number of positions where we had people in an acting position. We always appreciate those who step up and serve in an acting position, but it is better for the agency to have people put in there on a permanent basis. So I'm glad that we're really making some good progress on that front. And welcome Ms. McLaren. Mr. Palmer, do we have any management or administrative matters to discuss?
Madam Chair, we have no such matters.
In that case, this meeting is adjourned.